You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamu ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response is...
And good day, good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon, dear listeners, wherever you find yourself, this is The Home Run, specifically where we obviously, we try to avoid the comedy, but the comedy always, you know, does its best to sneak in and does, you know, does bring some format of comic relief into our conversation as we always do here on The Home Run. Now, I'll be joined a little bit later by my co-host, as always, what we always do, my partner in crime, that being Helmut. And then obviously we'll be taking this, the particular dissection that we're looking at the Hardap region for today. We're weighing it. We are literally weighing it like someone tries to weigh water, which is obviously a monumental task, depending on the weight and the size and the particular volume that you're trying to measure. However, I will start off with a very, very, very particularly good point that Governor McNabb actually cited back in his State of the Region address. He obviously started, just to jog your memories for you, those of you that had the opportunity of seeing it. He obviously started with some of the particular disaster relief responses during the past year up until his particular address. Which was done in June. And he also had the opportunity, to look at certain particular of the societal interventions that the region also, that was part of his sort of like starting chapter that began from that point. But I'm actually going to jump out of that because I'm going to get into the formal human development dimension that he did make a case for. Now, this ties into an interesting conversation that began back in last week, actually the week before in July, which stems from a parliamentary debate that took place in the Parliament of New Zealand. Yes, yes, yes. I'm citing an engagement that obviously began from a New Zealand or a Kiwi perspective. Now, what was interesting about this, which ties into what Governor McNabb also cited or highlighted in the starting point of his address, is there was a key particular engagement that the governor made reference to, and this engagement specifically was based upon information dissemination within the region of Hardap, or within the Hardap region, and the information dissemination exercise contained the use of local or let me rather say mother tongue or vernaculars, you know, all the other multiple phrases or terms that you can use to describe people technically who would like to hear information about developments in the region and developments across the country and how this impacts them in their mother tongue. He started off on one of the points in that direction, citing that there was a specific kind of a communication center that was set up by the Ministry of ICT in the region, in Marindal, in the regional authority office, which aims to empower information dissemination about major developments in the country, as well as also how this impacts people in the region. And when he cited the particular point that extensive translatory work was done in terms of converting from English into mother tongues in the region, I sat there thinking to myself, you know what? This is actually a particularly good point that needs to be dissected a little bit more across the country in terms of how, yes, you can have English as the medium that records, that officially records, you know, information and various particular developments in the country in English. But it should not, English should not be the medium technically that waters down the strength of the various languages, in the country, the various languages that are identified as part of the indigenous landscape. And we did an indigenous language dissection last year, that specifically Helmut and myself on the Homo. We did that last year, specifically dissecting the impact, the resilience, the protection coming through from UNESCO's particular aspect in terms of the decade of indigenous language protections, and how you work from there as a country in terms of, you know, preserving languages within your border because of the I'll describe what English technically is. English is very trendy. It is very enticing. It does make people in some way, if you've not noticed it ever before, you know, how people, you know, sit there wondering how eloquent it is for Dwight to sound like he's speaking, you know, the king's language all the way here in Southern Africa. Yeah, but I mean, it still doesn't make me a better person than you, because primarily I just speak English better. We won't debate that part. That's a subjective, you know, dimension that we might, a rabbit hole that we might trip and fall into. But from the governor's perspective, the connecting point that I'm making to the Kiwi Parliament from 2 weeks ago was a very famous internet clip, video clip of about 4 minutes, because I watched the full 4 minutes yesterday. Because I was trying to find it, the full 4 minutes of this debate contribution in the New Zealand Parliament, done by a member of Parliament, an MP, whose name is Tamantha? Or is it? Yeah, Tamantha, yeah. But anyway, so this MP, she stood up and actually challenged or countered the particular discussion on the current bill that they were busy debating in the New Zealand Parliament. And the bill that was being put up, and according to her testimony, which was submitted between another crucial bill and another bill on affordable housing to help affordable housing market in New Zealand, was the bill on making English the official language of New Zealand. And a lot of the, you know, a lot of the, if I can call them sort of like indigenous New Zealanders, but in terms of my explanation of indigenous, if, you know, you could prove that your family has been there for more than 100 years in that particular territory, then you technically qualify as indigenous already. But she stood up because she's a Maori, member of parliament. And she stood up and she cited specifically that it was a nonsense bill that they were busy debating. And primarily she went in this particular explainer in her particular counter argument regarding the bill, whether the bill should be entertained or not, this bill to make English a official language of New Zealand, because it was in protest because there's this massive, there are two factions technically in the New Zealand lawmaking dimension regarding, whether recognizing Maori and any other Polynesian language on the same level as English, or to elevate English like what happened in Namibia, to make English sort of like the sort of like focal official language of government and any other official platform, and thus relegating any other, languages in a country, in that particular country, to just being contained at home and any other particular spaces and not to be entertained. And just as, Helmut is getting comfortable. Helmut, how are you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Links. Good afternoon, listeners. I'm glad I caught you on the whole languages part.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
No, but I'm measuring this up against, remember the video I showed you of the New Zealand MP? Ewan David.
Yeah.
Because I actually measured it on, I actually compare the two in terms of the good work that the governor started off, because that was in his introduction.
Yeah.
The good work of disseminating information regarding national development and national interest in the region in mother tongue, mediums, so that everybody is, up to date.
Gets a picture of what's going on, yeah.
And when I showed you that video, I actually went and looked for that full video of that New Zealand MP, and I found the full almost 5-minute segment of it, watched it. I just don't know. I can't believe I forgot her name, but it's Tamantha something is her full name. And she highlighted primarily that not even – I'm getting to the summary now that Helmut has stepped in, guys. Not even English is the official language of England.
Sounds a little confusing to me.
Do you know what's the weirdest thing?
What is their official language? Because
there is no official language.
They have a bunch of different accents, some of which, they say it's English, but it sounds more German than English.
It is primarily based on that reason that you discovered.
Yeah.
Because I also went to go verify whether or not she was probably talking, just complete hot air, out of pulling it out of her neck. And the evidence is a little bit confusing, a little bit vague, but the Wikipedia entry that I had to read, because that was the more concise one that placed it together, is that the English even realize that if they made English official in England or in the UK, it would negate the Scottish English and even Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic, because the Irish still speak Scottish, still speak their Gaelic, but the Scots have, in great part, forgotten their Gaelic. Now they just have a heavy Scottish English. The Welsh still practice their Gaelic, which has been one of the reasons why, what's that independence movement that sprang up in Scotland just after COVID? What is that party's name, though? I almost said Reform Scotland. It's not Reform Scotland. But that particular, the basis of that party's political points that they were driving in the UK Parliament was that they wished to achieve independence primarily because Scotland's particular inclusion in the UK was based on a loose, sort of like a loose agreement, which was if you feel like it, you can still be part of the UK, but you may not have an army because we might come and beat you up again with our army, but you have certain freedoms. But then what happened in reality on the ground was that a full-scale, sort of like colonization of Scotland basically took place, and the Highlands and the various rural communities, and then all the particular all the particular nobles that they had, because Scotland was not supposed to have a king. The last king they had was, what's the guy's name? Bonnie Prince Charles. I don't know why I'm using his nicknames. Who was technically a Frenchman by origins. And the French were technically trying to use him to somehow sow, to undermine, sort of like the governance structures of England.
Yeah.
But technically they were using that guy to open up a second war front in order for the French take the French king before the French king was also like, you know, proven how to eat cake. Okay, like a couple, like a couple of years after that.
I mean, the French don't really, the French are very good at that.
Yeah, they are. So, it was a good thing specifically that he cited. The New Zealand MP who stood up 2 weeks back in her parliament there citing a nonsense bill about making English official in the, in New Zealand. English is official in Namibia, but I liked the two particular points because now where this language originates from, and, you know, a French linguist has written a lovely book. I've watched the documentary about him, his interview about his book, about English, where he basically says that English is just badly pronounced French. So now you all know. I'll find you the name through the course of the program today, but, Helmut, the governor obviously began on humanitarian and community relief measures and endeavors, which in some cases sounded like disaster relief, but wasn't disaster relief, because most of it was primarily based within urban settings. For example, like delivery of food delivery of meals and food at old age homes to vulnerable community members from Reaworth, from Rintal. There was another particular settlement mentioned as well, which, to my alarm, I know that Hardap did feature as part of the cluster of regions in the country that had the malnutrition risk, because it was Omheke, Hardap. We were surprised that it was Comas 2 years back. That was in 2024. And then it was Kunene. But to great extent, obviously, you would have thought, because when Helmut and I cited that particular interventions that were, that then led to the drought relief program that rolled out from 2024 into 2025, it was interesting to see specifically that the governor was citing still those particular interventions in 2026. Now, he didn't say whether it was delayed or not, because obviously his scope is ranging from 2025 into 2026. So it could have been, you know, you start from that calendar year or that previous financial year, because his reporting is based on financial year to financial year basis.
Yeah, 2024, 2025.
Yeah, and then 2025 to 2026.
You know, one thing I found actually, well, interesting Hardap region state of the region address. It's actually several things. And one, you know, the first one is the most obvious, the one that basically we have already discovered in the previous state of the region address. We've basically seen that there's actually a lot of information that, that we could use in trying to understand what's going on, not just on a regional level, but also on a national level. More like overall. So whether you look at crime statistics as in, for example, domestic violence or like the Hardap region governor pointed out in some of the most prevalent crimes in the region being stock theft and, drug abuse and the social impact, that all these types of crimes basically leads to. Now, one of the most fascinating thing that I found was that there was a lot of put your hands together for the Ministry of Home Affairs for producing this type of documentation documents that a lot of you are not making time to go and collect. And now, when you look at the piling up of uncollected IDs, just as an example, I don't think that's a Hardap region only problem.
No.
I think
even that's, Comas.
And it wasn't until the governor of Hardap region mentioned it, that's when I started thinking that can't only be true for Hardap region. That is most likely than not very true for the whole country.
Yeah.
So that means it's one of that issue that is just mentioned in at least in one State of the Region address that that I've listened to so far. But UK, I mean, you don't have to be an expert to know that this is, and we have seen a lot, of, and that's not the first time that is basically coming up. We have seen this, you know, coming up from different regions that, you know, the Ministry of Home Affairs is sitting with a lot of national documentation, especially national IDs that remains uncollected.
Mm.
Yeah. So after I basically, you know, well, concluded that most likely than not, the uncollected national documentations, especially IDs, is could be, you know, more often than not, could be true for the whole country, not just one region. And I couldn't help but go like, okay, is it okay if these guys just have one giant meeting of what they are going to update people on, because they have a lot of overlapping issues. They have unique issues. You have certain things that are just unique to every region, in terms of you know challenges that the challenges that they are facing, whether it's with regards to crime or economic or political discussion, but mostly economic, whether it's extractive and agriculture, because these are the two main main sectors that seems to be dominating the dominating the discussion.
Mm.
Now, and then he pointed out one thing that apart from the uncollected national documents, which I think is a problem for the whole country.
Yeah.
One thing that he also that's definitely,
you guys need to go get your stuff. Guys.
Please go and get your IDs.
Yeah, please, man.
Yeah. Now, and then the next thing that he pointed out was, especially when he started talking about drug abuse and how it ties into the overall crime statistics, of which most of it, at least that he was, you know, he pointed out as one of the most prevalent one being stock theft, and the amount of money which points to the economic ramifications that's coming from those activities.
Mm.
And then he points out that, of course, you know, these crimes are more often attributed to drug abuse, and drug abuse is more often attributed to a lot of things, including unemployment,
yeah,
especially amongst the youth. Then you can you can see a domino effect, or more like a cascading series of events in how they impact each other from one from one to the other, which more often leads you straight to social issues, which is social or economic issues in this case, well, unemployment. Now, apart from the uncollected IDs, just putting all that aside, they also did bring up one very interesting part, especially when it comes to the international relations for infrastructure and skills development with China. Is it that Hunan province?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they, you know, he did mention, I think, a vocational institution in China that have reached an agreement with the region to do some kind of student exchange program. And I'm just wondering, is this going to be done in English? I mean, I could have asked that question.
Is this, no, Helmut, no.
Is this going to be English? No. Or okay? No.
Unfortunately, okay. What I've seen, even from the government.
Look, he started off talking about languages. That's the part where I really, at least expect.
No. Helmut, the evidence, yeah. So far the evidence,
yeah,
counts against that particular endeavor, that the MICT endeavor that he started off with in his introduction, because even with the, you know, the China corner that we've had now for the past year,
yeah,
here on Eagle FM, as well as also the various people that you and I know specifically that have gone for training to China.
Yeah.
You have to spend it. Now they've lessened the period. I think it's like 6 months,
yeah,
that you're given to learn Chinese. Mandarin, not Chinese, Mandarin.
6 months? You need six years.
No. The one person I know, unfortunately, they were given like, go swim in the deep end. We are upstalling. We are installing all uploads and all updates, everything in 6 months. You will have to learn and be empowered, because their academic year doesn't start like ours at the 1st of January.
Mm-hmm.
They start in September and it runs from this year into that year.
Oh.
So you need to be there a little bit earlier so that meaning if you get accepted to the program,
yeah,
you need to be there earlier in China so that you can be trained from a certain part up to a certain part by the end of the year. And when the new year starts, you then
cast somewhere around September.
No, not September the next year.
Yeah.
When the new year of, let's say, 2027 starts,
yeah,
then you flow into the reason that you are there.
Jeez, man, Chinese in 6 months.
It's difficult. I'll tell you now, unless it's the only subject you've got for Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, like 5 days a week, not the, what did I have? Three days a week and after hours done with work. So at 5 o'clock, I've got a rush from Windhoek West all the way to Yunnan to go and get these languages. I mean, you experienced the same last year with the Russian. You know, you finish here and then you have to fly all the way there to on the other side of Game to there to IUM's particular. What's that second campus they've got? That's not second. That
yeah, the classes were being offered in Independence Avenue, just right next that side of ShopRite. Yeah, they have a campus there.
It was there?
Yeah.
Not here, close to Game?
No, not that one.
I thought that's where the language lab was.
I think it was that side because, you know, there was some kind of update of, you know, we moved to a different location.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You know, funny stuff. But, yeah, the unfortunate thing is if you're coming from Hartop and you have to, you know, be trained in China, Mandarin is the way, guys. Just learn the... Washer, Nisha, Neiman, Woman, learn all those things.
Woman? Seriously?
Yeah, but not women.
Oh.
Like, you understand it. It's written like women, the pinyin, but it's woman, meaning us. Neiman, meaning you, as a plural. And then there's war and ni. War, me, ni, you.
And here I was thinking Russian was difficult. That's no
get to those tones, my guy.
Not a chance.
Get to those tones. If you have the wrong little tone on the word, then you could be talking about rats and other particular vulgarities there to local Mandarin speaker. But yeah, but part of the particular thing is obviously that the governor also cited. I mean, he started from the human capital development perspective, Helmut, because one of the things that has always been my fear is whether or not there's a disconnect in reality between decisions and developments coming from Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting thing because him and Governor Nganate that we looked at yesterday for Omaeke, they both illustrated, they mentioned a word just briefly, and then they, you know, slid into all the other particular reportings that they had to do.
Mm-hmm.
They used decentralize at the start of their particular speeches yesterday. Okay, the one of yesterday and today. Obviously, these two particular, engagements took place July and June, respectively. It seems like the call or the particular focus to actually see not just development materializing in Windhoek actually is also materializes in like an Omaheke, in like a Hartop, in like with Oshana's particular address, we did I can't remember if we heard that word. Whether or not Governor Ipinga used that word in his speech, because he also started off from, you know, like giving the reporting of developments, and I didn't hear.
Slip, at least in the beginning, into the crime statistics.
Yeah, and also in terms of interventions, because he was citing interventions, which it also shows specifically how your feedback speech is written. Just hint to the governors, guys. It's nice sounding off and, you know, highlighting all the interventions specifically, but what is also interesting is whether or not you can also incorporate what we've learned specifically here on Eagle FM and other journalists elsewhere, is you do a little bit of comparison. You know, you do a 2025 versus a 2026 comparison.
Yeah.
You keep it short. You try to keep it short. But, I mean, hey, man, 16 pages sometimes is difficult to read and get through.
Look, it's not just that. If you look at, and this is one thing that I have observed. If you look at the amount of information that they have to work with, you can really try, you can really see that someone is really trying to break things down here.
Yeah.
In one sentence, he's talking about this is what we have observed, about crime. Just look at that sentence alone. Crime has dropped, for example, by, there have been observation of crime statistics dropping from 13% to 12% with that example, you have to understand that just that sentence alone, there's a lot of information.
Yeah.
What type of crimes?
Yeah.
Where?
Which places are the major hotspots? Which was that also not the particular concern we had, Helmut, with the employment, unemployment direction that Oshana's reporting began on, by saying 120 permanent jobs were started, but then all the 120 jobs are contained in one town council. And I was like, now in the private sector of the region? Which is also key, because the private sector is also part of developments in a region. Yeah. There was another thing also, just to add on that point of like looking at the crime. I really need to understand specifically how the crimes, I know how the crime statistics are basically, channeled to us, the media.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also up to you individually. Maybe I should start with this exercise and go back as far back as possible to collate actually, that which the police, shares with us, the media, every Sunday. Yes, we get it every Sunday, guys, because according to the police, I'm, attributing it to an authority.
Mm-hmm.
Crimes only happen between Friday and Sunday.
So when we are not at work, we make a lot of time for breaking the law.
Yes, for being...
unruly.
Well, unruly sounds like, kindergarten children, Helmut.
Isn't that exactly toddlers how we're behaving?
And primary school kids.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the severity of some of the crimes specifically, contained within the crime reports that I get access to, it would look like the word unruly is just not the label we should even think of.
Yeah.
I say that primarily because I've now gone back a couple of months now in this year to go and assess that former hometown of mine, because I've been living now for more than 20 years in Windhoek, specifically with Rehoboth. So it's two different regions, just so that you guys know. And even in the address of Governor Nyoma for Windhoek, for Kumas.
Kumas region.
The crime focus was also not as great. It wasn't. Because one of the key concerns has always been, how do we, how does each region approach the negatives? And the biggest negative is always crime.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be unemployed, but you're not a criminal. You can be... Okay. I'll end that sentence right there. Because I was about to say something contradictory to the first sentence that I uttered. But in all honesty, you can be unemployed, but you don't have any criminal tendencies or aspects in that scenario. So it's probably a question of specifically how certain interventions come about that tries to provide the necessary sort of like focus or the necessary grasping of or actually covering those that find themselves idle, if that is even the correct term to use, because I mean that term itself is even out of date by a couple of 50 years, so that means 100 years, because the adage goes like, idle hands makes for devil's playground.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm calling any criminal's hands devil's playground as well, but we've seen and we know of the truth actually manifesting from that phrase. What is important, Helmut, is that I'm getting back to the humanitarian component of things as well, is that we really have to understand the level of intervention on a societal level with regards to how to improve everyday lives. Now, you know, I hear wonderful stories coming out of the towns outside of Namibia. Now I see why the Deputy Minister of MESAC, Dino Baloti, said earlier today, Comas is not it's not the Republic of Comas.
Seriously?
It's not the Republic of Comas. So,
it's the Republic of Namibia.
Yes, but the thinking, the centralization that I keep complaining about. So when we look at, you know, developments and things happening in the towns and the regions apart from Comas, you are amazed. Secondly, you try to think in, how did I not know about this? But you don't have to know everything. Thirdly, you see a positive, because it means that, you know, there are things happening in those various urban settlements. And in those urban settlements, they have their own communities. What is a negative, and which I don't like, in terms of like the humanitarian side of things, is consistency. Helmut, this cold that we've been experiencing from, do you know that it is, do you know that South Africa has certain major roads blocked because of the origins of this cold?
Not another snow.
It is snowing.
Oh.
In South Africa. It is snowing in South Africa. It's probably one of the reasons why I almost didn't get up this morning, because I was just snuggling too lovely under my blankets.
And at 3 in the morning?
No, I'm talking about here at 6:30, at 7 a.m. this morning.
That's when everything gets very delicious.
Okay, Helmut. Now you took that to another direction. I'm talking about you in your bed, just sleeping.
Oh, solo, okay.
Yeah, no, not solo, just you in your bed. That's a relationship there. So getting back on track in the thinking and in the focus. So, South Africa has been experiencing that snow, right? And when I explained to you, remember the geographic anomaly of the Awas Mountains here between the Hardtop and the Comas region?
Yeah.
That, imagine the severity of how cold that cold front of yesterday was into this morning for southern Namibia, that, you know, was completely exposed by that cold front pushing up from at the South Pole. And the potential of also what that can do to elderly and vulnerable people in communities in, you know, the southern parts of Namibia. Now, from a humanitarian perspective, we would always assume that lack of rainfall means no grazing for wild animals, for agriculture, for livestock farming. Mm-hmm. Lack of rainfall means, you know, you can't grow any crops. But those are all in a rural setting. Those are environments and activities, you know, based on yesterday's Omaeke address, which, you know, saw the blooming agricultural activity across the region. You would know that that is a direct threat for what Governor Nganate reported on, that we dissected yesterday. But when you come to a discussion that where Governor McNabb began on for Hardtop, the humanitarian interventions, now you've got to ask yourself the question of, so if you look internally into urban settlements in your communities, how do you make sure that they've got adequate nutrition every day? They've got blankets, they are warm, they are dressed, which is also some of the particular, you know, if you've ever seen these like charity drives here in Windhoek at some of the retailers where they say, buy a can of beans for the needy in Windhoek. They go deliver, you know, like foods and things that people, you buy extra in the shop,
yeah,
and you drop it at it's a box that would be at the entrance.
Yeah.
Then you drop that which you bought extra into the box, and then it's part of some sort of a charity drive. How many of these particular initiatives do we see starting up? Because I remember back in COVID, we interviewed a lot of people, for example, here on Eagle FM, about humanitarian interventions on a daily basis, from basic things like diabetes, blood pressure, medication, that the needy, for example, like in the informal parts of Windhoek, couldn't access anymore because they couldn't approach the hospitals because of COVID, obviously. You know, can't come within a certain range to collect your heart medication, your blood pressure medication or your diabetes medication at the public hospitals. Okay, my toothache actually only began in 2021, just so that we are clear. But it was a gamble for many people.
Yeah.
Now, you still see the vulnerability cascade even further forward, 7 years on, 6 years on from 2020. We are still sitting with a particular aspect in terms of the vulnerability. Communities, demographics of your population still exposed to vulnerability. Now, remember, Helmut, when we looked at, that was last year and even into this year, the conditional grants that Minister of Finance obviously has to pay directly with Ministry of Gender and Child Welfare. The importance is that those are conditional grants, meaning how many people know that they could potentially go and register and be up to date, which actually factors back into your particular point about the national documents. You can't register without your national documents. So, guys, do you know how important it is to have your national documents?
Okay, first of all, if you have to say that...
Why must I say it?
If you have to be told that you need your national document, then you have, you know, we have a little bit of an issue.
Little? You call that little, Helmut?
It's ginormous.
They are on the level, that which Governor McNabb mentioned there, is on the level of gum. That community that was very close to where you worked.
Yeah.
You know, the bush teaching that you did.
Yeah. Just keep emphasizing that.
I mean, it does have a very exotic label to it, you know, bush teaching. It makes it sound like an adventure that you were on every day. You and the reverse parking expertise, you know, the...
You don't even see them.
I know you don't see them, but you know they are there.
Okay, well, on your way.
Okay. Yeah, but you know they are there. You know, and sometimes there's comic relief.
Jesus.
You were still saying.
If you have to be told that you need your national document, because look, for all the developmental, instead of just the, you know, throwing all, you know, let me just approach this all uncollected document, especially from a more of a, from a curiosity point of view. I would at least like to know, like, what is the main contributor to people not collecting their documents? Yeah, because one of the biggest problem we have as a country is a lot of people not having national documents.
Yeah.
So it's like the irony here is we say we have a large number of people that have we have a large number of people that don't have national documents, and at the same time we are sitting with piles of uncollected national documents. These are two problems that exist in a very ironic way. Because I would assume that if there are a lot of people that need national documents, then they will be on a constant watch over every time that they just register to get one. You are given a time frame that you should wait within before you have to go and collect yours.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'll be on a clock. I'll be crossing down dates on a calendar, looking forward to the day that I have to go and collect mine. But now we're sitting with seemingly two conflicting problems here. You have on one side a lot of people that don't have national documents, and on the other side you have a lot of uncollected national documents. So whose problem is it that whose problem is the fact that we don't have we have a lot of people that are not documented? Is it Minister of Home Affairs that are not doing their job right? Because if we point, you know, if we point that at the direction, if we point the blame in the direction of Minister of Home Affairs, they'll, you know what they're going to say?
Mm.
They'll say, oh, okay, you know what? We have a pile of uncollected documents here. So clearly, this is proof that we are doing our administrative activities to distribute these documents, or more like to register people. But look, the point I'm trying to make here is I'm looking at someone to more like motivate to put in the effort.
No, but if you walked all the way, Helmut,
yeah,
to go and register for the document, and then you are told, please come back on this day.
Yeah.
Then you come back on this day. You know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
Of those national documents? You paid.
Yeah.
You paid. You got a receipt. You paid. There's no way that I will forget I paid for something.
No.
And just leave it there. With the hope specifically of, you know what? Maybe they might call me. Look, I know the government probably doesn't want to appoint a call center person that comes and say, hey, Mr. Lynx, would you come and pick up your documents, please?
Please.
It's gathering dust over here. Are you still alive?
I mean, this is the confusion. We have a large number of people that are saying, no, we don't have documents. And we have a large number of, and on one side you have the institution that's responsible for the registration and distribution of this document, saying we have a pile of documents that remains uncollected.
Mm.
Now, as a curious citizen that would like to know what's happening at the Ministry of Home Affairs in relation to these documentations, for example, you can't help but go, this is a very confusing problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, the Ministry of Home Affairs is saying, well, we are registering people. Here is a proof. We have a pile of documents that are not collected. So, clearly we are working. The people now, the citizens must meet us halfway, as in they must come and collect their documents once they are registered.
Mm.
And, if they are not coming back, how is that our fault? Now, that's why I pointed out that I would like to, I at least personally want to approach this from a curiosity standpoint. Now, I want to know what is one of the main reasons why perhaps a lot of people have failed to collect, to come and collect their, or to go and collect, collect their national documents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because otherwise then, at least as far as I know about this topic, unless we try to look at what is the main cause or what is the main reason why a lot of people are failing to collect their documents, the best we can do is assume, and I don't really want to assume. And this is the part where I would actually bash the government, or more like the Minister of Home Affairs, to bring up at least consultations to ask people around the country as to what is one of the main contributing factors why a lot of people have a problem collecting their documents. But that will require public consultations, and those cost money, and we all know we don't have money to invest in things like that.
Oh, no, we do have
money. We have a lot of things that needs attention.
But we have money, don't worry.
You're not talking about the visa on arrival, are you?
Well, you know, that's an avenue. It's a money spinner. You know what's actually funny? That's a good thing you're mentioning that thing, eh? I would actually like to know what's the latest statistics on the visa. Okay, don't worry.
In terms of money.
Yeah. Do you know what, Helmut?
Yeah.
That money is money made, which just gets declared by that Ministry of Home Affairs, just like that, to Namra.
Yeah.
Then Namra just adds it into, like, okay, do they actually claim it? Yeah, they do. And then that is reported by October for the mid-year, midterm budget review. Yeah. And then we will hear, oh no, this amount was made from visas coming to Namibia.
For this time period.
Yeah. Which potentially actually speaks within the other particular developments. But before we actually start on the developments, so I quickly wanted to take a short ad break and come back right after that. What's not to love about USAVE's special mid-August combo? For just 219 Namibian dollars, you can get 5 bags of essential foods, 2.5 kilos Champion Super Maize meal, 5 kilos Bokomo Fetcook flour, 2 kilogram rice, nice rice, 1 kilo selected grande pasta, and 2 kilograms marathon sugar. That's just 219 Namibian dollars for 5 bags of essential products. Yes, we all save at USave. So coming back from that short break right there, you are on the home run here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. It's we're not the bad news bears today. Don't worry, guys. We sometimes forget to do that. That's usually when there's a report that actually motivates that particular dimension. But we were listening. We were students for today, primarily looking at key developments. So, just before the break, I mean, that was a good thing that you cited about the visas discussion, because it seems tourism is also one of the particular developmental aspects or dimensions
in the region
that Governor McNab cited. The other one is obviously the key intervention for agriculture, but tourism is sort of like a ignored sector that they've also got to see going. I'll share my insights now in terms of why
tourism or agriculture.
Agriculture has always been there.
Yeah.
Agriculture has always been the fiber of the region of Hartab, which has been the same for Omaike, which has been the same for Karas, Ochotonjupa, all the regions across the country.
Yeah.
It just depends on how you define it. What's the balance of commercial versus subsistence? And in the subsistence, is it like communal land, or is it traditional authorities, which are communal land, by the way? What kind of subsistence are we looking at? And, you know, what's the size of the land that the person or the house...
So you're looking at, from the backyard gardening example of Maheke yesterday to a commercial level type of comparison.
And that's the funny thing, Almut, because much of the interventions that the governor cited, he cited there was a drought relief program. Okay, not a drought relief, a drought resilience program that the Japanese embassy, alongside the Food and Agriculture Organization. I remember the update. It was from May, because I saw it. The funny thing was even that the Ministry of Agriculture people asked us, the media, do you guys want to be there? And we were like, will you sponsor transport? And then it was just crickets and silence from there.
What do you mean, do you guys want to be there?
The funny thing
is... Of course I want to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to, you know, get out of Windhoek a little bit and, yeah, and, you know, go and collect content for work somewhere else. But the downside was it was a drought resilience program.
Yeah.
That was aimed at 1,200 farmers in that particular time frame.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the governor also cited this particular intervention. Drought resilience is going to become a key theme for the rest of this year of 2026, because, like we said yesterday, we have to now sit here crossing fingers and singing "Come by here, my Lord," because we now have to identify who's going to experience what's his name,
El Nino,
and who's going to have the joys or the possible negatives of La Nina. And this is now happening across the world. We now know Europe has no rainfall.
Hang on a second. Remember when the entire ground floor of Van Hill shopping mall went for swimming?
Wasn't that 2024 or 2023? I think it was 2023 or 2024.
Yeah.
But...
You know, I still have no idea what caused that. Was it heavy rains or just a blocked, drainage system, or both?
It's both. Plus also how the mall itself stands.
Mm-hmm.
Because since it happened so long ago, the actual cause, because Vernil stands right next to, there's a massive canal. I don't know if you remember the canal. It runs from the service station right next to Vinyl.
Yeah.
That total service station. Yeah. It runs from there all the way through to what's the L that it makes there at Transnamap? At the train station. Boy. It runs all the way up to that other total service station there at the back.
Yeah.
With the bridge that you cross over into Windhoek West. So that canal forms part of, like, you know, a drainage system because it channels water away. But that canal feeds in from a river that starts from Tal Street here in just above that service station. So from the blood transfusion services in Tal Street.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you have the Natus office. There's a river there. But before we continue, we take an eye break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Coming back, dear listeners, there from the quick ad break, as well as also the quick intervention, that gets us to the just past the top of the hour at 5 p.m. You are still here with the very lovely, this is the first time I'm using the word lovely to describe the two of us, the very lovely duo of the Home Run here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Where we left off, Helmut, you asked a particular question in terms of, you know, how do we see this canal, this river specifically, that led to the unfortunate flooding that happened at Vernier a couple of years back. The core thing is that Windhoek relies, if you look at how Windhoek is built around the river systems, Windhoek relies on the river systems to be our drainage away, meaning taking the water, excess water from rainfall out of the city. Because we are hilly, we've got a lot of elevated scenarios. We have a lot of bridges, which also, you know, and the storm drains. The storm drains also help with channeling water away from the streets. The concern is, if you think about these things that I'm now just describing, most towns in Namibia do not look like Windhoek.
In terms of drainage system or terrain?
Drainage systems. The terrain, the geography.
Yeah, the terrain, actually, that's a good thing.
The geography it's built over and the massive investment into that infrastructure. I'll tell you now, Helmut, if you drive through Marintal right now, not on the highway, through Marintal on the way to Chess, when you turn off from the highway into Marintal, you won't see a drainage, you won't see storm drains on the side of the main roads of the town.
That doesn't sound like a good sign. I mean, a good thing if
it's
the town experience some heavy rain.
It's probably one of the flattest towns in Namibia. Unless you've driven through, for example, like Ongwediva, which doesn't even have the same level of like infrastructure that Oshakati has. Because Oshakati has canals in certain places next to the roads, which helps with drainage away from certain pieces of infrastructure. Because it becomes, you know, it's a tedious exercise every year if you've got to fix up roads and stuff like that, washed away.
Because of standing water.
Because of standing water flowing in from Angola in certain cases. Yeah. So you see these interesting canal and engineering, you know, feats that were done in the town planning of the town. You see Ongwediva obviously trying to achieve certain particular installations their side. May God be with Ondangwa, whatever is happening in Ondangwa. I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry, but I've been to your town. I've seen it. If you get to Rundu, it's also, you know, go with this Holy Spirit situations there. That's not Anakleta's world. I'm sorry, Anakleta. If you get, even if you get to Grootfontein, Grootfontein is probably the only other town that's slightly more elevated, that has aspects of elevation
mm-hmm.
within its design and layout
yeah.
than any other town in Namibia, besides Windhoek. Because Grootfontein, there's a part where when you turn up from the highway, which runs through the town as well,
yeah.
similar to like Marintal, similar to like any other Namibian town, yeah. the B1 runs through the town. If you turn up from that town,
yeah.
not the one that takes you to, you know, the pre-apartheid planning on the right.
Yeah.
I'm now talking about as you head northwards.
Yeah.
Not the pre-apartheid planning that, you know, if you turn right, you turn into the segregated areas, the pre-segregated areas.
Yeah.
And when if you turn left, you turn into the nice part of the town.
You know, when you look at where you find the train tracks, take for example the side of OK. I'm not sure. I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah.
I'm assuming OK is still where it was last time I saw.
On the main. Highway.
Yeah. So
was it OK or was it Voerman?
No, OK. I remember because there was
a Voerman on that road, Hamoud.
Yeah, I think so, but. The one that now I remember that because I was coming from Swakop, I believe, and I was in a hurry, right?
Mm.
So I just I go straight to the I get in that shop and buy a bunch of stuff, and I had like a bunch of plastics just for my food stuff for the month.
Mm.
I forgot like two plastics of I think pasta, spaghetti, a bunch of my food stuff.
You forget two bags, how much?
I know.
Look,
I can
miss one grocery item not in the bag because the lady forgot to help pack it.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, and I didn't realize that until I think the next day when I was just because I arrived at night. I was just trying to look through stuff and I'm like, okay, now, what did I buy? And yeah, okay, I have this and this. And then I realized, okay, where are my other stuff?
So you were here, mate, by the cashier.
Yeah, so now you have to understand that I'm now 270 kilometers away from the shop. I forgot the stuff, and it's in the next day. I was like, okay, you know what? This stuff happened. But the thing is, when you come from that area,
yeah,
and you go the side of what's the easiest example I can use? Do you know where the Freemasonry Hall is located in?
In
Grootfontein, yeah.
No, Helmut. I was as far as where the one school is, which is in the middle of when you turn left, heading northwards, turn left into the town. And then I saw the wonderful layout. I was like, "What?"
Because when you come from where OK is located, basically from the from the highway, and you have there's also one of my favorite B&B, and along the road. If you are facing the side of Tsumkwe, basically you are facing northward ish. On your left,
I'm not thinking. Which direction? If I'm standing on that road.
You're facing.
Because the new shopping mall is on the right in that other neighborhood that's hidden behind bushes and trees.
Who designed that town?
The pre-independence neighborhood.
Anyway, look.
I'm sorry. Look, I know someone in Grootfontein.
Look, man.
And if she had to use
Let's just use Nampost. Let's just. Because it's even worse.
My direction.
Look, let's just use Nampost because that's a very obvious direction, more like a location. It's difficult to miss.
Yeah.
If you're standing at Nampost, if you're standing at Nampost and you're facing northwards, if you go left, you'll see that there's more of an upward slope.
Mm.
But if you go right, there's more of a downward slope.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. On the right, it was pre-independence planning.
So that was
on the left. It's
yeah, but you have to understand the right pre-independence planning was for let's just get all this stuff here and go and build somewhere else. But
it looks properly layered out. if you turn right,
yeah,
the slightly slopish downish,
yeah,
where the industrial park also is, where the new mall is built. If you drive there, you're like, it looks nice. It looks chill. It's like George. Nothing comes close to George.
Yeah, they have one. The mall is an awesome design. It's an awesome. That town
has a lot of potential.
Yeah, and you know that when you're standing, not potential. And you know when you're standing. You know when you're standing where the mall is, and you look at the side, you know, you face the direction of the highway, you can see the upward slope.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I also saw specifically when we had to turn up at one of the streets, because before you get to the town council's, the municipality's offices, which is literally at the edge of the town as you exit out, and it's a lovely building, flattish. The downside was you would usually think your local authority is built in the middle of the town, not at the edge out as you exit out northwards of the town. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life with that town. But, but still, Grootfontein, Tumip, they still have like...
a lot of potential.
Potentials. Well, Tumip is beautiful. Grootfontein has a different potential. When I say different, Helmut, it has a different potential. If it can if it can just shake that sleepy farm... But I'm describing many towns in Namibia with that sleepy farm vibe situation of... And you're like, can't you guys become a slight little bit more cosmopolitan?
I think they are slowly becoming that.
They've got to become that.
Yeah.
They literally do have to become that. But,
You know one thing I've learned so far just after going through, well, three state of the region address for this, for this year. This number four. One thing I've come to, to realize that a lot of things that we hear from, a lot of things that are being addressed in terms of especially development and challenges.
Yeah.
Take crime statistics, for example. Every region has a crime statistics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing that, and also something that's coming out of the Hardap State of the Region address, uncollected documents, for example, national documents. I believe at every region, if they were just to look at the documentation of their citizens and keep in touch with, almost like ask their branch or, in our case, the head office of the Minister of Home Affairs, we'll find out that every region has undocumented citizens, and you have those ones that are documented and haven't collected their national documents, and you have either the head office or the regional branches of the Ministry of Home Affairs sitting with a bunch of documents that are not collected. So,
and the officials at that regional branch or office is always on lunch at 8 a.m. in the morning. I'm just making a spurious allegation. Don't worry, guys.
That was Dwight.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Don't worry. I know you guys. You know who you are. You know who you are.
Look, the thing is, that's why I pointed out earlier that, okay, I think, they have a lot of overlapping things that, that they can report. That is basically present in every region, like the crime statistics that I pointed out and the uncollected documents.
Yeah.
So, at this point, when I'm hearing it coming out of Hardap, I want to know what's going on in relation to this particular subject in all other regions, because it wasn't addressed in any of the state of the region address that we've looked through, that we've gone through.
Mm.
And when we listen to, now, one thing that you see there is, agriculture and education seems to be referenced a lot, which is a good thing, because it's present in all the regions, and it is equally important. Now, crime statistics. Take the governor of Oceana region, or the recent Oceana State of the Region address, also pointed out a few crime statistics, and the Hardap region also pointed out the exact same thing. And you can see that, okay, crime is prevalent, which is it's a no brainer, because every region is going to have its own crime statistics. But what type of crimes are prevalent, and how is the security cluster addressing all these things? Different types of crimes are going to require different ways of addressing them. Now, one thing which is why when it comes to crime, to the crime statistics, one thing I found interesting about the Hardap region crime statistics is the governor pointed out, okay, we have this increase in crime, and the major cause of these crimes, which he pointed out, was drug abuse. Mm. And then he went on further to explain that one of the major causes of drug abuse is youth unemployment. Mm. That type of explaining in terms of, because it basically goes to show you that these problems are not isolated. They are very interconnected in more ways than one.
Yeah.
So that means addressing crime will have, you know, we'll have to, you know, we'll have to start from addressing the economic and social issues that is causing people to abuse drugs, which then push them into the pit of desperation to the point of committing these particular crimes. And Harda makes for one killer state of the region address, and I'm saying that because of the rehabilitation programs.
Okay, you can continue on that
like,
one.
Now. Don't worry. These are not now. This is not the condemnation.
But this is
correctional services.
No, but it's a good thing that, which was also, but funny why he commemorated the passing of the correctional officers at the start.
Oh yeah.
Why?
They are crime fighters, and it also happened in his region. So
yeah, which is a given. And then the funny thing was, it was literally 2 months ahead of the day that they passed away. They passed away in August. We are now only in August. He gave his delivery of his account
in June.
In June.
Yeah.
I was wondering, why are you...
It's a political thing, Dwight. It's all protocol observed. You know the drill.
Yeah, that is true, eh?
Yeah.
It's all, yeah, that is true. Yeah. So, yeah. You wanted to say specifically on the correctional dimensions.
Yeah, you have several things here, and look, it's the layout, and I'm someone who is basically a little obsessed with patterns, because he started off with the Hunan province and the Hadap region type of interaction, or more like a relationship that is or will be based on developmental. On skills and infrastructure development.
Yeah.
Now, on skills development, he did emphasize more, which also I found very fascinating, on technical education more than the academic, book smart ones. So starting from there, and then he comes to the rehabilitation discussion, and then he points out that you have a lot of people that are basically acquiring new skills and graduating from behind bars. So it all speaks into, it all speaks into skills development.
But then when you go look at what our colleague Penny had been doing when she started with the Sunday show?
Now, that is where I was headed.
Yeah.
Again, that's one of those things that is taking place in all regions because of Penny's show. But
because of Penny's show.
Yeah, because of Penny's show, we know that it's, there are people that basically, they did a lot of questionable things and then found themselves on the wrong side of the law and did their time. And now they're trying to call it, making amends to society in the incorporation process and to being back as a productive member of society.
Or upstanding. Achieving upstanding.
And now we're just stretching it.
Okay.
Now,
okay. I was still trying to.
At this point, we're just being mean.
Look, to add some butter in that description, but you were saying, okay.
Look, you have crime statistics, what type of crimes are prevalent and how are these crimes being addressed and what is the root cause.
Yeah.
Again, these are problems that can be found in all the regions, and different regions are going to have different ways of addressing the specific type of crimes that are unique to these particular regions.
Yeah.
It's something that that I had and basically found very informative coming out of the Hadap State of the Region address.
Mm.
And I can't help but do a compare and contrast. Okay, this is happening. Okay, these are the numbers that are coming out take for example incarceration and rehabilitation and
skills
development and graduation in Hardap region. In this regard, just this regard alone, rehabilitating individuals back into being productive members of society, what's happening in other regions in relation to this particular subject?
And does that not ask the question in terms of the 360-degree view that we asked for coming back from the Oshana address heading this way? Because I'm sorry to hammer on the same point again, like from Governor Ipinge's address, you can't say job creation and it's only public sector that you announce.
Well, it's technically it's job creation.
It is. But when you say job creation, you can't just say one half of society.
Yeah.
Okay, this half, you performed well. Then we move on.
Yeah.
Okay, now in the private sector, did you go and ask them? How many people did they employ? Do you know how big your private sector is? That was the point I wanted to make yesterday. Oh my goodness, can you believe it? A whole day later. The point I wanted to make...
You got it.
Which still is relevant to all four of the regional addresses that we looked at.
Yeah.
So the NSA, Helmut, went and looked and assessed how many buildings, which are not residential buildings, the census mapping of 2022. They went and they did this for 2 years, for 3 years, from 2020 to 2022. And they did for every region a census mapping exercise.
Yeah.
So you go in a region, you go into each of the constituencies, each of the urban settlements, and you assess the building types.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, outside of Windhoek, the dominant building or premises owner is government. There is very little entrepreneurial spirit or endeavor outside of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reason why Deputy Minister Balotti made that comment earlier today at the event that I went to, the creative event that I went to, where he said, where he specifically said, it's not the Republic of Commerce, please, or the Commerce Republic of Namibia, no, or any of those particular...
I'll go with People's Republic of Commerce.
Where now? Okay. So the concern has been,
Let's write commas with a C. It'll come even awesome.
Commas with a C, Helmut?
People's Republic of Commas.
Okay. I know where you're going with that. I will stop there. Because if it becomes a C, it will say Chomas. What are you trying to say, Helmut? Yeah. Please let me and the listeners be educated by why you're trying to replace the K with a C.
People's Republic of China?
Was a bit too obvious to you. But you do know that if the K drops in the C,
then we have a sister country.
Then we are Chomas.
Mm-hmm. So, at this point, you might as well just replace
Chomi.
The A with an I, and it sounds even better.
Then we are Chomis.
Yeah.
People's Republic of Chomis.
People's Republic of Chomis. Everyone is very friendly here.
So. That assessment that the NSA did in that space in preparation for census of 2023 is that they wanted to see how many of these buildings are there that are not residential and that primarily serve some sort of an economic purpose. You could assume basically also that churches might be left out, even though you and I and almost 98% of Namibia knows that the pastor is employed from the Robin Hood activities that they conduct within their congregations, whereby the congregation just freely
Robin Hood activities
relinquishes money to said pastor, you know. So, that's why I call it Robin Hood activities, because that pastor is convincing his or her congregation with, like, you depart from your money.
So it's...
And And don't feel
midday
bad.
Robbery.
Yeah, don't. It's basically not midday. It's morning robbery, because it's literally in the morning that it takes place. But anyway, so that assessment that the NSA realized or came to realization in a region like with Hardap and with Omaeke, they realized that it is firstly Mm-hmm. If you look at Hartab, Hartab does have a lot of smaller urban settlements and class and farming communities hidden between the commercial farms and private land ownership. And then they've got the two larger settlements of Rehoboth and Marindal. But what they also realized is that there is, and I am actually shocked, that the unemployment figure, according to the governor, is only at, 32%? That he cited. I was superbly shocked by this. I mean, this technically does answer the case of the support function that Harta plays for Comas's economy. Mm-hmm. Because yes, if the enumeration was done by the NSA enumerators in the field back in 2023, they would have obviously come across people who would have said, yes, I work in Windhoek, and you only find me here on Saturdays and Sundays in Rehoboth, and after hours from 6 or 7. But nonetheless, yes, my breadwinning activity is based in the capital. Versus, potentially, whether or not that breadwinning potential is contained within the region, i.e. that the person works in the region, lives in the region, earns the money in the region, and thus you can measure the particular economic aspect of that region's, you know, economic profile. Now, here's where things get tricky. I have a sneaky suspicion that the accusation that many Namibian youth back in 2023 made against the NSA when they came up with their census regarding, you know, how accurate is the 3 million estimation of Namibians. If you go look at some of these towns outside of Windhoek, it seems like these towns actually grew exponentially. Specifically the town of Rehoboth, specifically the town of Okahania, those that have commuting populations to Windhoek, they've grown exponentially. They've grown exponentially, and the understanding that I'm driving towards there is that it's not a population that grew because Marindal grew, or Okahania didn't grow because Otjiwarongo grew.
Isn't that, doesn't the urban to rural migration factor into the explanations to why the populations of some urban areas are growing?
Well, in the Namibian context, you can just basically follow the B1. Yeah. And you could go like, okay, who's closer to Windhoek? Now, what is one of the funny things is that you've got urban to urban migration taking place. And then you've got the rest of the rural to Windhoek urban migration. So that means the rest of the country is coming to the bright lights of Windhoek.
Yeah.
Coming like, hey, we're coming here to the big city. There's opportunities here. And yes, the opportunities do arise up. It's just at which station of life you find that opportunity.
Yeah.
We sit with an undefined or unexplained phenomena within that rural to urban migration dilemma, Helmut. We've heard ministers cited. We've heard even governors cited. But it's not really tackled as to say, okay, let's understand the rural to urban. Let's understand, for example, what I explained to you, what that Italian explained to my sister back in last week when we looked, no, with yesterday. It was with yesterday's discussion. And you find it in the U.S., with the example of the U.S. that I also cited. In Italy, you'll only find the elderly in the small rural towns left. All the young people went to the cities, the major cities in Italy. I think Germany is probably one of the exceptions, except for that story of the town that was sold off by the local authority to the mining company to get the coal underneath the town, the coal deposit. Do you know why that town was sold to that company? Because everybody had migrated out of the town. The town was dead.
So the town was dying anyway.
Yeah, the town was dead. Which is now also the curse that Japan is experiencing. Schools closing. Namibia is facing this naturally, Helmut. We will face this dilemma. And at one stage, the government will have to answer this question of, will we have to invest in rural development? Or will we anyway achieve our modernization by sacrificing rural communities. You can come in, dear listeners, at 083-288-401 on that dimension of the discussion, because Namibia does have a lot of rural communities.
You know, look, this is one of the biggest problems, that, especially when it comes to the population discussion.
Yeah.
Right now, it seems like, you know, there are two main camps. You have a lot of people that are talking about, you know, overpopulation, 8 billion and, you know, and rising. But here's one thing. The UN, you know, the UN put the population projection, you know, as increase, or that it's going to increase all the way to 2050, and then we're going to start seeing a decline in terms of you know, in terms of rising population. Yeah, yeah. But no, you and I, what we can already see.
We'll quickly take an ad break, guys. We come back right after that. What you can already see, Helmut. Remember that.
Yeah.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
We come back, dear listeners, from a slightly extended break right there, but we were quickly sorting out something off air. Now, you were still on a train of thought.
On the population discussion.
Yeah.
One thing that we can already see in terms of the population discussion, and this is not just Namibian population discussion, we know we don't have a lot of discussion to have, you know, in terms of that. Especially in the discussions around overpopulation. The thing is, when you look at a lot of developed countries, especially countries like Singapore, where it's more obvious, like, you know, Japan and South Korea and China, you have, because it's more than just the people. When it comes to population, one thing that I've actually, you know, learned from a lot of these documentations, more like population discussions, there's not, for a lot of us, for a lot of, more like a lot of people, when they talk about population, population size, you know, overpopulation, they are looking at the people available. But, you know, available right now. But statisticians, some like population experts, are looking at not just what the population is now, what it will be in the next 10 years by looking at the replacement rate. Now, if you have a falling replacement rate, even if you have a large number of people now, that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign.
No,
which is why, you have countries like China with 1.4 billion people incentivizing or trying to figure out ways to, to incentivize families, because they are not looking at the type of population that they have now. Because if that's all they looked at, China would not, you know, they wouldn't have a problem. They wouldn't be talking about. They wouldn't have to worry about their population, but they're looking at the replacement rate, and they're looking at the, because from your replacement rate, that's where your future workforce is coming from. Because you need a large number of active workforce compared to the people that are going in retirement. If you have it the other way around, you are overburdening your current workforce, which is a terrible idea. So for countries like Namibia, we are going to, for us, if you look at the landmass to population ratio, the overpopulation is not a discussion that we're going to have at any time soon.
We will actually face,
economic wise,
a different in that, but yeah, first finish
Summer. Yeah, economic-wise, a whole argument can be made for or against. But one thing that one thing that you can already see is, what developed countries like Singapore are going through. I think we have a lot of things to learn from what those countries are, are going through right now. Because I feel like for a very long time, they prioritize, let's build an economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of them basically, started, emphasized family planning, because we don't have we don't want to deal with a large number to distribute resources to. And now that whole of that whole idea of don't have many kids, for example, and that can be done theoretically by basically telling people not to have as much kids as and not to have many kids. And a lot of developed countries have done that at some point. And that's one. Now the second one is the cost of living. That's the major point right now why a lot of people are deciding to have less or no kids at all. And a lot of them are just deciding not to get married, because the cost of living is just, it keeps rising by the day. Now, here's the thing. We are going to find ourselves, and not just as a country, but as a species, and at least economic-wise, where we are going to start looking at, okay, it's either we have to figure out robotics.
Yeah.
To make up for the shortfall of the workforce, or we have to figure out ways to incentivize families to have more kids for our future workforce.
Mm.
Right now, the second one doesn't seem to be something that a lot of countries are exploring. The first one of using technology to make up for the future shortfall, because it's coming, for the future shortfall of workforce, that seems to be the direction that a lot of countries are exploring with the advent of robotics and AI. But we better hope it works out. But one biggest flaw with that is that even if it works 100% efficiency, you are going to have another big problem. If you have a dwindling population, if you have a declining population, you have a declining consumption probably.
Yep.
Now that brings you to one very 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 basic business principle: if no one is consuming your product,
who are you making it for?
Who are you making it for?
Yep, which was the AI question we asked last year.
Well, I mean, for a bunch of tech guys that can figure out complex mathematics formulas, they're really dumb at this.
It's the faces we see.
Mm.
Who are we? We are assuming they are the intelligent ones.
Not the faces. The faces we see are the dumb ones.
They're just the money.
Thank you. Those are just the money. Yeah. No wonder they keep making kindergarten level mistakes. Actually, I apologize to all the kindergartners out there. These guys keep making mistakes that are dumber than kindergarten.
Do you know what was been the what was the scariest interview I ever saw?
Yeah.
Back in last year, with regarding when you and I, we had to dissect a lot of the AI developments and whatnot. The scariest interview was seeing the interview done by the guy that is known as the godfather or the grandfather of AI, the guy that worked for Microsoft, for IBM, the Englishman, the British guy. He was interviewed by one of the platforms that I like watching on YouTube, Novara Media, and he explained something very basic. He said, it's the input that, let's say, the higher ups in the company mm-hmm. wants the thing to do. Because he was just there for research and development.
Yeah.
He was appointed for R&D because he was poached from a UK university,
yeah.
then brought over to the United States. His particular, what he says specifically had been, the things we see AI potentially doing
mm-hmm.
here in front, what we see and interact with, is like 1,000 times... it's digestible than the things that they had to work with in the labs and, doing their research and development on. This then gets to the dimensions of how we need to understand the next levels of developments. Because if you look at what Governor McNabb had to focus on in his address, in his second address. Yeah, he did have one last year. In his second address. Mm-hmm. His one of last year technically probably would have been just a report card. Basically. Because it feeds on from the previous governor, April, who is now a member of parliament.
Yeah.
So, Governor McNabb cited, a humanitarian, with variations of societal influences within his particular reporting, because it was about the people.
Yeah.
And what this means to the people on the ground. I still think that him and Governor and Ganate's feedbacks were probably the best, to see, to try and understand how it actually helps people on the ground in their regions.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we looked at the first two, you know, it was like just, it's just a report for the sake of reporting scenarios. Don't worry, guys. It's the reason why we look at communication here on the radio. We do that.
Yeah.
So if we're going to look at where Namibia's other regions besides Comas wishes to be in the next, let's say that 50 years by 2050, no? 20 years. 24 years.
Yeah, 24 years.
24 years from now. In the next 24 years, Helmut, we will definitely have, the population definitely would have grown because you can anticipate that there will be censuses taking place. So yeah. 2023 took place. So that means by 2033 we need to have our next census.
Mm.
If we stick by the 11-year difference.
Which I hope we don't.
We will. We are very rigid. If you've never realized it, we are very rigid, Hamoud. We're not Donald Trump, who is willing to be in court into infinity, even posthumously. He will be in court, Hamoud, for everything he has done. Have you heard that the amount of court cases ramping up against him and his government? Starting with Doja's illegality of firing people. Did you know that Elon Musk did not have mandate to fire people?
Now, okay, if you look at this administration, this the Trump administration basically kicked it up a notch and made it very obvious in the way that they violate their, you know, pretty much every piece of legislation that stood in between his way and in between him and whatever money that he was planning on making from whatever activities that he organized.
Yeah.
And but this is something that has been done by a lot of American presidents. But the thing is, the Trump administration just they didn't do it in a smart way. Yeah. Yeah, like they didn't even put in the effort. Like that's what was that not Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show pointed out. I think it was Jon Stewart that pointed out that usually when the U.S. goes to war, we usually cook up some kind of a PR picture to give to the public to convince them to justify over why we should spend billions or trillions of dollars and thousands of lives or basically millions on both sides to go to war. But this administration didn't even put in the effort to come up with a sellable excuse to the public to support them, which is why this is one of those many. I think it's safe to say this is one of the most terribly planned war. Because you have public officials in the administration retiring on account of just their rational idea not getting through to the head of their commander in chief, and
which is very surprising.
It's actually not. Now, if you think Kim Jong Un having nukes is dangerous, you'll have a hard time convincing me that Trump is the right guy.
No,
Trump to hold nuclear football.
Trump wanted to drop a nuclear bomb. Did you hear about that testimony? He wanted to drop a nuke right after 28 February, when the fight with Iran began.
Yeah.
In that first week, he wanted to drop a nuke, Helmut.
Now, is
in 2026, we were this close to nuclear fallout.
Now you see the problem. So now I'm supposed to believe Kim Jong-un is a deranged one. At this point, Kim Jong-un is very rational. And you have someone who is coming from a quote-unquote civilized world. I don't know who came up with that crap. But the whole thing is, if you look at the previous Trump administration and this administration, I think, one thing that I see from, not just the Trump, but his campaign contributor is that I think they made sure that when Trump comes back to the Oval Office, they made sure that he's surrounded by like one gentleman who's also American, points out. They made sure that he was surrounded by a bunch of yes men.
But he was surrounded in the first part by yes men.
Not at this level.
Well, it's because they underestimated the functions of government. They thought they thought they could roughshod.
Yeah.
You know, in term one,
yeah,
they could just roughshod, and then there were guardrails. Like I explained, the purpose of the guys that were fired in each ministry in the U.S.
The auditors.
But they call them the directors general.
Mm-hmm.
These are like ACC representatives.
Oh.
But they also have an auditor general, an auditor function as well.
Yeah.
So they've got budget accountability and governance accountability to maintain in each ministry or in each department
in their case, yeah.
And it was the first thing. That was the first departments.
Isn't that the first
people that Trump fired?
I mean, that's basically
The U.S. president. Did you know the U.S. president doesn't even have legality to fire an everyday government official on the street?
Yeah, but he got away with it.
No, they are back. It's the court cases you don't hear about.
And now they are back.
They're not back in office. They're
basically suing the heck out of each other.
Yeah. These developments are looking ugly for that country. The downside is what we've got to look into, specifically in the Namibian context. And this is the other point that I almost forgot about. Referencing, you know, the 2050 agenda.
In terms of population, yeah.
Population growth, trend analysis, anticipating needs analysis into the future as well. Let's, for example, say Hartab and Omaheke, incorporating Omaheke yesterday, with the agricultural emphasis, you know, ramping up agricultural activities throughout their regions. Let's, for example, say these two regions achieve their, let's say, suitable levels of agricultural activities and initiatives rolling out. It seems like there's adequate enough public participation and public benefit being derived from these activities, because it's all about food, basically, and potential economic activities then deriving from that. The question from here is, Helmut, that we've got to battle as Namibia, which factors into the first thing that I cited at the start of our discussion regarding why it is snowing in South Africa, is climate change. We don't have a clear cut. No one can obviously tell you the future. I've tried researching that. There is no such thing. You'll find charlatans and you'll find AI just making you happy for no reason.
Yeah, don't use any of those.
Yeah. And even if you go see ladies that read your fortunes in teacups, be careful as well.
No, they're just broke. Look.
It's not just the brokenness. Things will start disappearing in your place, just letting you know.
What the heck did you go through?
Not me. I know somebody. But not me. And I was like, yo, I don't want to miss my belt. But yeah. Helmut, let's take an
analogy. Yeah. Vilvicha University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences programs. Certificate for enrolled nurse, midwife, / accoucheur level 6. Certificate in pharmacy level 5. Diploma in environmental health sciences level 6. Bachelor of social works, honors. Bachelor of nursing and midwifery science, honors. Postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8. Postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety level 8. Postgraduate diploma in mental health nursing level 8. Master of public health and master of occupational health and safety. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
Bargain hunters, why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions for $194 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. 3 kilograms Polana
elbow and macaroni pasta for $72.99. 500 grams Brick Rama original 70% fat spread for $26.99. 750 mils Right Brand sunflower oil for $29.99. 700 mils Crystal Gold tomato sauce, an absolute bargain, for $22.99. And 5 kilos of Marathon White Sugar for $99.99. Save big at USave. So yeah, Helmut, as we obviously looked out, where Namibia wants to go up until in the next 24 years, up until 2050, we will need more detailed trend analysis, data collection, data analysis as well, and also to try and understand the opportunities being created, because you can see from all these governors' addresses, they try to cite the opportunities that they created, but it's a question on whether or not the opportunities technically are sustainable or they're technically resilient in the conditions that they find themselves in. I mean, when I realized in our discussion with Omayeke yesterday about Farm Nieuwehoop or New Hope in its English translation, that you kept asking me about the pronunciation, and I sat there frowning only to realize, isn't this the resettlement farm meant for one of the sun groups in Omayeke? Which technically possibly... Look, that's why I said, Helmut, it's a noble thing that, that the region is doing. Mm. Bringing an agricultural activity to a community. Because obviously, it is the mandate of the government to care for its citizens. But it's obviously where the biblical adage also comes in terms of you can feed a man with fish every day, or you can teach them how to fish, which is basically the particular, you know, perspective that was taken by the region in terms of the Omayeke participation. But now it changes the way of life, which is a UNESCO protected activity, in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not saying that any potential law case, it could lead to a lawsuit.
Because with the environmental guys, most likely.
Not just that, but also in terms of the cultural preservation dimensions. But obviously, remember that Omayeke was sort of like the core of the malnutrition fright back in 2022, 2021. Now, this is obviously, as we're looking ahead into the dimensions of even that what Hartap wants to achieve in its particular own case. So alongside the agricultural developments, there's also the tourism developments.
Yeah.
But I've got a big bone to pick with my former region.
Mm-hmm.
I have observed this. This is just from everyday interactions with people. But it seems that culture, there was a time, Helmut, up until the 80s, early 90s, where creativity was a thing. There were bands, there were performances. But like allowing creativity to permeate through everybody, you know, whether it be boy or girl. I remember my first music class was one of the public schools there in Rehoboth, St. Joseph's, because I'm Catholic. I was put in a Catholic public school and primary school. And that was my first exposure, that there was talent. There was the ability to train certain things within a community setting.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the line, you know, things just got forgotten or pushed out or just sidelined in terms of what to focus on. Now, tourism, if we have not realized this, dear listeners, tourism is not just about showing people monuments or showing them a goat or showing them an antelope or exposing them potentially to the fright of their lives for how big the bite of a lion is or showing them the reverse park master known as the warthog. A.K.A. in Afrikaans, known Bosvark, you know.
Boswarna?
Bosvark. Bush pig. That's technically what it is. Fark is pig. Even though the word fark can also be used as an insult to someone.
In the same language? That's interesting.
Yeah. It depends on how much emotion you put behind that word. But yeah. Yeah, how much emotion you put behind that word.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. So when you've got to look at the tourism potential, it's not just about the lodges. It's not just about taking people on scenic drives. It's not just about taking people to lovely sites, for example, like you've got. I still want to know about the creativity behind the naming of a dam to Lake Wanop. Asseblief, someone help me. It's a dam. It's a man-made structure. It was built by people. And do you know what these guys do, Helmut?
Wait, what dam?
Wanop Dam. Wanop is built for Rehoboth. Hartab is built for the rest of the Hartab region. Neckartal is in Karas. And then you've got the Nauta Dam built for the major urban parts of Karas. Rehoboth is the only town that has its own exclusive dam.
Well, it was its own jurisdiction for a while.
It still has its own particular deeds registry office.
Yeah.
Which is laws that the new Republic of Namibia just inherited like that.
That's thanks to your Minister of Agriculture screw up.
You can't technically call it a screw up because, you know, it was an understanding primarily of nuances in terms of legislation. It's one of the reasons why if you go look at, for example, debates in Parliament, you try to understand the thinking of the argument being placed forward.
Yeah.
For example, like the thinking that we saw specifically with the medical training facilities.
Yeah.
You remember the questions that the MPs were asking the people, and the business owners kept responding with the same response by saying, but according to the assessment criteria, I must first be operating.
I must be operating. I must have students. I must have a facility.
I must have tutors and teachers who are trained.
And I must be in session. I must be assessed while in session.
Not just in session. I must be operational.
Yeah.
All of these are pre-investment levels to being operational.
And all at the same time,
and
the assessor...
Yeah.
Is telling the people that are instrumental in my assessment not to opt for me because I'm not assessed yet.
But they went and presented to the same MPs to describe to these MPs, no, but this is criteria we have here. But the people operating in the economy are saying, these are the criteria we were given. We can't go left or right without this criteria.
Look, those two events, that and the Oshagati courtroom door, those two, you know.
I thought we moved on from that door.
Oh, no, we didn't.
That door is still haunting us.
No, it's still haunting Oshagati. Actually, it's not haunting Oshagati. It's haunting the...
It's haunting us.
The standing committee.
No, that standing committee doesn't exist anymore.
You're right.
Katumila is now deputy speaker of National Assembly. What was the other MP, Cooper? She is, okay, she's still there, but she's in a different standing committee. And then the other two Chikere Tuya is, he's not in any.
Hang on a second.
He's not in any standing committees anymore. And then the third guy that was there, which is the fourth participant, I don't remember that MP as well. So none of those guys, except for Katumila and Cooper.
Look, In their meeting with the Office of the Judiciary Representative
and
Minister of Justice,
yeah.
the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Constitutional and Legal Affairs on the Shagati courtroom door asked a question that to me came out as a very obvious.
Mm.
Because the question they posed to the, especially directed, and it was also answered by the judiciary guys was, why is it taking longer, basically? And I'm paraphrasing here. Why is it taking longer to replace a door? Aren't there any other ways of more like expediting this door replacing process?
Mm.
Now, someone from the judiciary had to explain to lawmakers
and that, Ministry of Finance.
By the way, according to the laws that you guys made,
We have to follow.
You made, we have to follow. What it says is that you can only go for plan B of procurement under very strict conditions which are stipulated in the act that you passed to us to follow.
Mm.
Now, if you made the laws and you show up to, and you give them to me to apply, and you show up at my door telling me, didn't I write something in there that is supposed to give you a plan B? My question would be, aren't you supposed to know that there is no any other way that fits my scenario?
Yeah.
Because I would assume you knew that your plan B, in terms of, they were referring to emergency procurement, that the requirements of emergency procurement under the current Public Procurement Act are very specific as to what constitutes emergency procurement. And the condition that the Shekate Courtroom Door was under the point at the time did not meet those requirements. So if they solved that whole 5 months of trying to replace a door using the public procurement emergency procurement method, they would have ended up in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that you have MPs that if you, just from my point of view, that are supposed to know the plan A and plan B of basically a normal and public procurement, asking, aren't there any other ways of doing this? I stood there asking myself, okay, this is not a good picture. Now, and then that brings us to the next part of, the health institutions,
yeah,
the requirements of setting up health institutions. And I get the goal is to have high quality and, high quality education and relations to producing health experts. And that obviously spills into the best health service provision overall, basically nationwide, because these are the institutions that are producing your future medical, service or health service providers. And you have, again, public officials, lawmakers, public official representatives asking, okay, why are you guys not following this? Again, the people being interviewed are explaining, I hate to walk you through your own rules, but this is what they say.
Yeah. And these rules...
And these rules that...
is what the whole country follows.
Yeah. And I would assume you knew the... Well, I assumed you knew the contradictions, but judging by your questions, it doesn't really look like you do, but I'm going to walk you through it.
Mm.
And the dilemma here is I have to, I must be in operation.
Yeah.
For me to, I must have in operation for me to be assessed while in operation for me to be accredited. And then the same accrediting institutions are telling everyone that I need in my operation for me to be assessed not to opt for me. Now, what am I supposed to do? Look, if you are planning on being a career politician, believe me, public office is not easy.
Well, it's also dimensional. It's a good thing that you started with that. It's also a dimension in terms of how we've got to look at not just public office, but I almost said the word yoga.
Really?
Not public yoga. I almost said the word yoga. So it's how we also have to look at how the role of politics fits into an economic picture of a country.
Yeah.
If you're going to be dysfunctional like the US and the UK, that I have now come to a clear understanding and a decision upon, my observation is purely, it's completely dysfunctional. If you get to South Africa, it's a horror show. Like the South Africans are making...
South Africa is wrong 10.
Like they say on social media, South Africa is a comedy show in terms of way of life and politics even.
Mm-hmm.
No, South Africa is a complete horror show. It is horror. It is on the level of Alfred Hitchcock levels of horror. You don't know if you are safe or not, but you are safe and you are not safe at the same time. You are critical but stable. Trevor Noah's grandmother asked the doctor, "What? Which one is she? Critical and stable or critical and stable?"
Evan Schrodinger's cat.
You know? So we've got to ask these particular, we've got to assess these particular examples. Obviously, Namibia is trying to do its own thing.
Yeah.
Namibia is trying to achieve its own sovereign identity, which is good. And Namibia obviously tries to achieve its own particular developments in terms of the development partners that assist us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we step forward in terms of looking at, okay, how do things, how can we advance things? This is where I bring in, for example, the direct interventions that even Omar Heke cited yesterday. And there's a direct intervention at the start of Hartab that Governor McNab made mention of. 417 teachers that were all trained, that were trained for all grades in the region. 417 teachers is a lot of teachers, is a lot of schools. Now, this particular training obviously means ramping up the educational output of the region, because you then have to ask the question, okay, so, okay, he did not explain partially the why for the training, the extra additional training. He also cited specifically that this is to champion the educational performance of the region. So you could also then assume, okay, so probably the performance seemed sluggish.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't at desired levels as what it should have been. Now, there is also a dimension, Hamoud, that feeds into this discussion of human capital development, which feeds into the other point you made about the communication dissemination feature or benefit, is in terms of how people use the information, the knowledge that they are exposed to. You see, Helmut, there was a time that, for example, a broad base of Namibia's only output in terms of, if you finish grade 12 in the 90s, was to go and study in South Africa. And to go and study in South Africa was a major financial burden on your parents. Now, Namibia obviously has ramped up internal investment into UNAM and later on
NAS. Yeah, to have local high institutions.
Yeah, and then it along the way came IUM, and then along the way further expansions and acquisitions, for example, like NIMT, which I thought for a long time NIMT was independent and privately owned, but then there was a particular agreement signed where NIMT was handed over to the government. So NIMT is now is a government institution. You didn't know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah, I also, for a long time, lived under a rock with the presumption, you know, dominating.
I think NIMT paved my direction of Afrikaans in a whole different direction.
Yeah, I know that most of the tutors are
Afrikaans. Yeah, and they are, at least the one that I was just surrounded with. They were not very formal.
Kap di deng, slan di deng,
gallop
di deng. I'm keeping it all civil, guys. Don't worry. Helmut was exposed to
some very interesting.
A lot of anger.
A lot of it.
There's a lot of anger there.
And a lot of yelling. The most toxic thing is you get used to it, and then you start following along.
You mean you develop, what's that, Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, you develop Stockholm syndrome.
And you just comply. You're like,
yeah, you just comply, and then you know.
You even know how to respond.
Exactly.
Under situations.
Yeah, and then it becomes, and then you realize,
problematic.
When did I get here?
Problematic.
But look.
We were all there.
Look, you'll only be asking yourself, okay, how did I get here? But the thing is, it gets to the point where it's very captivating.
Yeah.
And I use the word toxic because it becomes fun.
Oh my goodness!
Look.
Yeah, I know it gets there. And then you start, if you have to move into a completely English-based environment, then you start missing that.
Like, oh man, something is missing.
You even suffer withdrawal syndrome of some sort in terms of, you know, I need that captivating environment again. But yeah, so when it comes to the particular sort of like knowledge sharing and how knowledge is created. Very many parts of this country, many regions of this country, face a major uphill struggle primarily based upon how the knowledge is generated. Helmut, it is about, it probably is the best time now, before 2030 even, that we've got to look at a third university, not in Windhoek, please, for everything that's everything that's good. We don't need a third university in Windhoek. We already have three. There should be a fourth or fifth one. I don't know what happened to the privately owned one in Okahania, the one that was in partnership with the established university from Indonesia, Lim Kok Kwing. I don't know if it's still there, operating. But we need a third or fourth.
Hang on a second. I don't know the guys that now have us, you know, have a building, the side where you have, you know, the old Parkfoods.
Oh, my God. Are they... Are they, did they decide to move to Windhoek?
Yeah, there's a park for the, you know where but you'd find Parkfoods?
Komasa.
Yeah. No.
No, that's Triumphant. Isn't it Triumphant? Up the road from Parkfoods?
They're basically in the same street.
Where are these? Where's this new development again?
Cornaline Street.
Cornaline. Isn't that the massive street helmet that runs around?
Yeah, that's the one.
Now, where are they building?
You're coming from... when you come from Hyper, follow the road from Hyper.
Yeah.
When you go...
Across the robot now.
Just across the robot.
Yeah.
The Cornaline Street branches out on your left.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this building just right at that junction when you branch out left.
Which is Parkfoods.
Yeah, yeah. They basically took that structure and you find a giant...
Oh, so now they repurposed it.
Yeah.
But it had funny banners on last year, the last time I was
there. Those
there.
Funny banners, you'll find just one giant Lim Kok Kwing. Not Lim Kok Loose. I mean, I like the name. Was that out loud?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, you know, moving on. So we would need a definite one more institution outside of Windhoek. Because we are technically creating a deficiency for many of the other urban settlements and regions of this country, Hamut.
Can this also be attributed to our decentralization problem?
It is specifically a decentralization agenda, because decentralization means, which is also the other particular complaint I personally have with our established universities is, stop with the satellite campus business. No, really. I have not seen this with the major universities on this planet. They don't do these things.
They don't do satellite.
Suddenly Namibia comes here with a reinvention of distribution. And then the funny thing is that you want to take students from Windhoek to go live in Lüderitz.
Yeah.
Or students from Oshakati to go live in Rundu.
Yeah.
Where, Helmut? Waar het jy hierdie goed gehoor? Where?
Yeah, but, dude, come on. There's just 3 million of us. Give us up to 2050 to do all the necessary exercise.
But do you know what would have been a doable thing in terms of economic scaling?
Mm-hmm.
If you gave a proposal as a government to all those that wish to set up universities, yes, your job, Helmut, for Mahongo United University is to put it in Divundu. Attract investment to Divundu.
Yeah.
Where is MIT in the US? It's in a small backwater town.
Yeah.
That town's economic feature is the university. Not Stanford in California. Even Harvard. Harvard is in a small town. What's the other one's name? Yale is in a small town.
A lot of them are not in urban areas.
Stellenbosch isn't a small town. Stellenbosch is surrounded by farmland, but the university is in the town. Rhodes is in the town of... What's that town? Stupid town's name? I'm sorry for calling it stupid, guys. What's that town's name in the Eastern Cape of South Africa? That's just where the snow is falling, close to Rhodes. That's the town. That town where that university is. Who's the other one? There's another university also. Potchefstroom. University of Northwest sits literally on an intersection of mining and agricultural industries all around that town of Potchefstroom in the northwest of South Africa. It's got a university. It's the university, remember this, Helmut, that trained much of Southern Africa's pastors.
Oh. Including the miracle workers?
No, they came along, you know, the ones that call themselves prophets. They came afterwards.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know where we got this thing of the prophet, of people calling themselves prophets. If you have not realized this, no one has used the word prophet since the Old Testament.
Look, when it comes to the whole prophets things.
And prophetesses.
And prophetess. Ladies, gather around. 90% of the blame on prophets, I blame them on ladies. You guys worship these guys a lot. I've attended several of those churches. There are 70 to 80% women.
And the weirdest thing is,
you guys like miracles a lot.
And the weirdest thing is that the guy, said particular religious leader,
he's
acting like a rock star. He's acting like Mick Jagger. When Mick Jagger was 25 in 1965.
Well, that's because even when he coughs, someone is taking notes about the man coughing. That's how important he is.
It was such a spiritual intervention.
Yeah, it was such a spiritual cough.
He gave a slight respiratory
Bro has
injury.
Flu.
Yes.
The main problem you have here is what's one thing that was revealed by the gold documentary in Zimbabwe? What's that?
It's not Gold Rod, definitely.
It doesn't have
that name.
Not Gold Rod. There are a lot of religious leaders that were implicated in that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not just the smuggling, but it's basically part of washing the money.
Mm.
And that's when I came to realize that you have a lot of there are a lot of ways one can wash money, and. I think I was a little naive to actually look at it from the perspective of religion is not one of those aspects, but that documentary proved me wrong. That people these days would use anything to launder money, including starting a church if they have to.
Mm. No, they would.
That's
why Bushiri is...
And you know what's amazing?
Case number one.
It works. Works like a charm. Because the money is very difficult to, you know, to account for as to how much money, you know, your congregants are paying per week, or those that are giving ordinary offerings or tithe or just generous contribution, or after you told them, you know, they can just throw in a couple of bucks for extra prayer from a man of God.
Mm. Extra prayer.
I can't believe people would fall for that. But anyway. Look, man.
That's why I keep telling you, there's money in this country.
Look, man.
Whether or not it's public.
My main problem with that myth is...
Or dubiously.
When I have a problem, I have to go and pray. But I'm the one far from God. When you have a problem, you that is closer to God, I have to contribute.
And to ensure that some possible divine intervention falls in my benefit.
Is
generated in my benefit.
So I should give you what I have so that you can pray to God who you are close to for him to give
supposedly
me.
Close but, to.
Look, the math is a very confusing one for me.
No, the math is pretty clear.
It's not clear.
Somebody is being conned.
Look, this is a Tura boy with a Bible. Let's face it.
Not even.
My apologies to Tura boy.
Tura boys are actually honest.
Yeah, Tura boys are honest. Yeah. Just give me your staff or exile your stick. Now, this.
You should be banned from Afrikaans. You're going to have a whole comedy show on just a very bland sentence. But you know what? You could please continue.
Thank you. Now, deceivers when it comes to stealing, or more like fraud, are politicians and pastors, because they are not very honest about it. One thing I like about Tura boys is they are very honest about it.
Yeah, and they even invent products.
Yeah.
Like we've seen.
They even dress for the occasion.
They create a product that no one has seen before.
No.
And request this product.
And don't worry, you know, I've been thinking about that. My, you know, my next set is going to be all in Afrikaans. And I'll buy for you a ticket.
I don't think I'll survive that night. I don't think I'll survive that night.
And this is the same issue that we basically have with our, you know, our MPs.
Mm.
Yeah.
No.
My next part is going to be, okay, now, I'm a Kavango, I can make fun of this. Look, the thing is, look at it this way.
Yeah.
As a Kavango, if I wanted to become a security guard, for example, it would be very difficult for me to know who am I protecting this facility from.
Mm.
The thieves that will come from outside or the CEO, because every time that's something missing in a company, more often a bunch of high-profile guys that work for that particular company are the first to be implicated.
Yeah.
So shout out to Tura Boys.
Yep.
They're honest about it. And you have everyone else who is basically living a lie. But to be fair, to pull off fraud, you have to act. I mean, it's a scheme. I mean, is it Charles Ponzi, where we get the word Ponzi scheme? Basically did the exact same thing by lying to his investors about some very lucrative investments which he knew were not going to work out, and a lot of people poured their money in those type of investments and then ended up disappearing with the money. But then again, he was Italian. I don't know how they didn't see that coming.
Wasn't that in the 1930s, Amon?
Yeah.
And guess who emulates the same Ponzi scheme also? What's this guy's name?
Pretty much every Forex trader I know.
Bernie Madoff, also here in 2010-ish, also running a Ponzi scheme. Had no previous background in financial management.
Isn't it scary of how easy it is to fool a large number of people?
With a lot of money.
Yeah.
Who have a lot of money.
Look, the scary thing is...
Well, okay, the scariest is Epstein.
Not just that. Actually, the scariest thing is... The scariest thing is if you can fool a large number of people with something that is clearly basically apparent as you have a pig butchering or scamming and all those things or a Ponzi scheme, what that tells you is that if you come up, you can come up with the most ridiculous political ideology, and a lot of people still fall for it.
Yeah, which they are.
Yeah. Which makes...
Have you heard of the British politician Nigel Farage having to defend his seat in his local constituency where he comes from against a guy who calls himself Count Binface?
Count what?
Binface.
Jeez, that's one heck of a name.
We've got to look it up. But before we do that, let's take a caller's contribution. Well, I answered. You can call back at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen what you have to add. So, I'm not going into the Count Binface discussion with Nigel Farage. The interesting thing is, Helmut, that we obviously see that so far we can take the reporting at face value in terms of what all these governors have so far, from the four governors we've looked at, have so far basically shared in terms of developments, interventions, as well as also some challenges and things that they wish to achieve. Regions like Omaheke and Hartab have got a large presence of basically a very powerful inhabitant, commercial farmers.
Mm-hmm.
When I say powerful, they've got money,
mm-hmm.
and money is a resource.
Yeah.
Primarily to provide the necessary change and to do their particular thing. I mean, one of the interesting things is that Hartab is also known for having its own particular watermelon production. And remember, I interviewed one of those farmers last year. Remember the guy that I interviewed regarding the cutting where NamWater said they won't share water anymore with the irrigation systems in Hartab. And the farmer I interviewed, even though it was an Afrikaans, he was the chairperson of that particular farmers association. But before we continue, let's take a caller's contribution. Eagle FM, good evening. Hello.
Angabona? How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm okay, Angabona. What do you want to share?
Ah, my friends. Do you think I've listened? Except when you tell me what is your, even though you always talk a lot of things, what is the key issue that you guys have been addressing?
One of the key issues we've been dissecting, the governor of Hartab's particular address to his inhabitants of Hartab. And some of the fundamental developmental things that emanate, which are similar to the other regional addresses we've looked at, but that emanate from it.
The issues of economic development,
societal development, educational, agricultural, overall economic integration.
Let's talk about that.
Go for it, Angabona. Go for it, go for it. Let's hear.
Yeah, so, you see, somebody was talking, I was listening to you guys. I mean, it was, I think, was it not you who was interviewing that a lady, woman whom we were talking about, public issue, public transport, how to collaborate in the grid, and issues of that nature. So why is it that people are working in cells?
Angabona, between you and me, you've been the government employee, not me. I've not been a government employee. You need to answer that question for me.
No, the government should work together with the private sector.
Yes.
The greater system should also focus on that, on both.
Yeah.
Private, public, like the issue that you were interviewing that woman, I was listening in the morning during that maybe from 4 days or 5, when we were talking about public transport. I know it's a repeated program, but to me it was so necessary. It was key. And the people need to, especially when it comes to agriculture or any other thing actually. These sectors need to work together in agriculture. I know how that we have been having all those years. We used to talk about proper, you know, people who are technicians, who are expert, most of this, that area. So people were really exposed to technical work. And many of them were coming from VTC. I mean, they were trained from VTC. You could find them constructing, you know, those hands, you know, those people who are doing those things. They were just there. Not like most of the, we black. We just got integrated into the system recently. But they have been, you know, you have been there, guys. You know how to come up with a plan. You know, you can really do a lot of things. So, but the people are still working. No, they are not actually. Everybody's minding his own business.
And that is, that's a very disappointing thing, Angabona, because it still happens.
Still happening. Why is it like that?
I really don't know, Angabona. I can share one dimension, which is something that an academic showed at the start of this year at. Another particular report unveiling where he said, we Namibians, we are technically our biggest enemies towards each other because we undermine each other a lot. We technically work against each other in many scenarios.
When are we going to work for a common purpose?
But that's just the thing, Angabona.
Is Helmut there?
He's here.
Helmut.
Yeah?
Helmut. I have come across that word.
Which word?
When when they deal with some of this, especially when you deal with these criminal issues, cases, you always find that, that word, common purpose, And I came to, I did not understand it very well in terms of legality, how people can really cooperate and maybe commit a crime. And it's also very difficult to now to pinpoint who is really have acted, actually acted, you know. And even if they have acted in common purpose, it is always very difficult to, you know, to separate. If you don't find one guilty, so you might also not find the other guilty, the other person guilty, who have committed a crime. So it's so difficult. Now Dwight is talking about issues of, you know, people working in parallel, and they cannot come together. So why do you think people really do that? And it's very difficult to prove in terms of criminal liability. Why is it now in our own ordinary people here, we also do not work together? Why?
Why we do not work together?
To achieve a common purpose.
Now, okay, maybe, okay, looking at this from a developmental standpoint, I think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of points to make, and there are a lot of points that have been observed in the public and, let me just say, a public office spectrum. And this is not just in Namibia, but just the world over, in the world of politics, because it's built on, you know, it has a lot of antagonistic features in a way of, it's more often working with a lot of people disagreeing. Not necessarily that that's a bad thing. Of course, it can cause sluggish in terms of implementation of a lot of things, but, now, you know, one thing that I think we pointed out some parts of this during yesterday's State of the Region address coming out of the Mahike region, when, you know, the governor Nganate kept pointing out that we don't really have time to, you know, to play politics. This is one of those things where, you know, at least from my understanding of what the governor Nganate was saying, that it's pretty much, you know, it reminded me of what Ramaphosa said when he addressed the, you know, the March and March in South Africa. You can say that, you know, he kept saying that there are certain forces that want to destabilize our, to use our more like grievances to destabilize our country. It's one of those things where you get, you know, where you see that this is an African adult that knows something, but they don't want to point it out word for word. I think that's what came into my head when the governor Nganate kept saying, you know, we don't have time to play politics. We can't play politics when people are hungry. We really have to come to the table and, you know, iron things out instead of using basically cheap political language to fight each other on political grounds when we have important developmental world initiatives to execute.
And that is one of
I would argue that's one of those reasons why we don't work with each other. Sometimes, well, we can't just, I can just decide not to work with you, not because your idea is wrong, but because you beat me in an election.
Yeah, but those are some of the reasons, I think, why the few registrations are not being passed, and apparently people are not working together, and they are just asking questions like I'm asking now, and those questions apparently they consume a lot of time, and for you to answer, and people can't come together to agree on important issues. And now you have mentioned about the political agenda or, you know, issues of that nature. But when it comes to even the politicians, they should work together because they are addressing most of the issues that they are addressing actually impact the region. And if people are not coordinating themselves very well, you find a lot of wastage of resources, because you might be maybe 2, 3, 4 entities are actually addressing the same thing. And if that is the case, maybe they need people of your mind to help us to really come up with some kind of concerted effort and see how we can make a breakthrough. Because issues of poverty and all these things, they are cross-cutting issues, actually.
Yep.
So thank you. Unfortunately, I miss your discussion.
It's all good, Angubana. Don't worry.
Yeah. Thank you very much, guys. We continue.
100%.
When is this young man coming, King David?
We've excused him for today, technically, Angubana. Because he's also slightly busy finishing up on some articles for the e-paper. So I also have to finish up mine.
You are really educating us on those articles.
Yeah.
And I think by the time when we start doing serious research, your articles will definitely add more knowledge on ourselves.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. Enjoy your night.
You too, Angubona. Enjoy the rest of the evening.
Thank you. God bless.
So, in a nutshell, Hamoud, that's technically where, Angubona did technically provide the conclusion in the discussion for the last 25 minutes of today's program. Basically, we basically also, partly answered some of the dimensions of it, because I think it's only Nganate that's the only one that basically cited this, the politics at play.
Politics will always be at play. I think when we look at this, it's one of the things that is one thing we don't address is it's not something that we are going to 100% iron out. Yeah. Disagreements will always be there.
Yeah.
It's not like we have some kind of medication in the form of a pill that you can give one to swallow and to, not be a rival, or be petty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, addressing it in the way that I believe the governor of Omaha region did, that's a good thing. And it's also not everyone involved, not everyone in public office is that petty. But you are going to have, in every institution, you are going to have those ones that are petty. You'll have a lot of people that are petty, that are just disagreeing for the sake of disagreeing, not basing it on any type of, rational ground. As long as we have a large number enough of people that are just grown up enough to put their differences aside in execution of their public duties, then I would argue we're making progress.
Or we could make progress.
Yeah.
There's actually a funny, a slightly funny quote that pops up from, from Parliament, of the previous parliamentary session of last year when, not of last year, the year before when, what was the minister's name? Kawana stood up and told the opposition, guys, when you are opposing a point, please don't oppose for the sake of opposing. At least add something to you. If you're going to oppose, add something that adds value. Which was something that I always observed in terms of the deliberations also in the National Assembly. I know I'm throwing a lot of stones at that platform, but in some cases, for example, I've now been assessing the kinds of understanding that the standing committees wish to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
The standing committees on natural resources, on economics, those guys have a clear-cut understanding of how they approach something. Even though in the one in economics and the one in natural resources, they sometimes overlap in terms of their fact-finding missions.
Yeah.
Because the standing committees are now currently, just to give you an update, they're currently this week and into next week, they're busy with fact-finding missions. That's why Anakleta had been enjoying herself so much.
Oh, yeah, she's having a good time.
Specifically with the Standing Committee on Public Accounts that's in
than in the speaking to Rundu Town Council's people, where they've heard for about 8 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the financial statements of the town council had not been.
Oh, man.
And that's gold. We have to wait for that report.
Just can't wait until it's all compiled, it's polished,
and it
lands on this desk, and then we'll take it from there.
When that report comes, the blades would have been sharpened. The steak knives would have been bought that day.
Yeah, I think, I think the very rational, you know, thing about addressing issues as soon as possible. I think that's where fact-finding missions by the National Assembly and National Council Standing Committees are very important from my point of view, because they seek to not just sit at the central government. Government offices in Windhoek and assume what is going on in the Zambezi region or in Commerce region,
which is surprising that they do it and not the ministries do it as often.
That's very interesting, because now they have to go out there and instead of assuming what is going on in the agriculture sector, mining sector, or creative sector, they have to go out there and basically interview people that are involved in these sectors to try to gather as much information as possible with regards to the development and especially the challenge that that they're going through.
The nice thing is they've got a research question to start from.
They have a research question, because the thing is, when it comes to some of these issues, I look at the fact finding missions from the National Assembly and National Council Standing Committee as a part of more like running diagnostics, because you don't want to wake up the next day and realize that you have been having a disease for the past 10, 20 years that you should have addressed.
In year one. Yeah.
So you don't want to reach a point of a point of no return.
Yeah,
my Russian friends like to say "tochka nie vazvrata," which means a point of no return. Tochka is basically full stop, like full stop. Now, the thing is,
In German, it's punkt.
Punkt what?
Punkt.
You know, one thing I've come to learn about, there's one lady that creates her entire content on the German language, and that's where I've learned that Germans don't name things; they describe them.
Yeah. Have you heard of a Krankenwagen?
I've seen the joke about an ambulance.
How the girl said it, even.
Yeah.
Krankenwagen.
One thing that I just find fascinating about the language is how they pronounce the R.
Yeah. No, but them in French are the closest.
Yeah.
They say it at the back of the throat. Whereas.
No, we just push it.
Whereas you come here to Afrikaans and you hear krank.
Krank, just bringing all the. So what you want is for me, the fact-finding missions are very important in a way of not just good for updating those that are interested like you and me with regards to what's going on in the world, not in the world, what's going on in our country in all kinds of sectors. But
I was about to say, how did we get international?
I know, right? the standing committees do travel to other countries to try and find out how some issues are being dealt with, like parliamentary standing committee on housing was in Rwanda, the previous parliamentary standing committee, and the parliamentary standing committee, the previous parliamentary standing committee on agriculture found themselves in Ethiopia at some point, I believe. And the legal one found themselves in Zambia with where they tried to look at how the central judiciary, or more like the legislative bodies, how they work with the traditional authorities.
So how they use traditional laws, apparently, also.
Yeah, like the link between their civil legislations and their traditional authority type of legislations and the individuals involved is a very interesting one in a way that they are interconnected.
Yeah.
We know this. We know Rwanda is trying to solve the housing problems because of the parliamentary standing committee. We know how Ethiopia is navigating the challenges associated with agriculture and food security and all those things because of the parliamentary standing committees.
Mm.
Now,
Now, all these things, and the only one that I did not read through is the one on defense with Botswana. But before...
Yeah, we still have to get... We still needed to get to that one. But yeah.
But before, then, before we continue, let's take a short break.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250ml jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750ml Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And we come back, dear listeners, there as we head into sort of like the actual home runs. No, not today, Helmut, not today.
Okay.
Yeah. So we, as we head into the actual home stretch of the home run for today, what is key for us to depart from in terms of these governor addresses regarding their regions, has been that you see the same picture, you see in some cases great improvements, in some cases you see okay, it's a slightly small situation that has to be dealt with. I mean, Helmut, if you've got, should we still look at Ochoa Dunjuba? Because Hartab is a massive region. Ochoa Dunjuba is also a massive region.
It's Hartab.
Oshana is a pretty small
it's a
region,
very tiny one,
in terms of land mass.
Land mass, yeah.
Comas, much
relatively.
The heavy lifting is being done by the city of Windhoek. We all know this. When you get to Omaheke, it seemed like Omaheke was an actual sort of like deep dive that we cited yesterday. And when you look at actually big regions of the country, you have to understand, okay, how does this regional authority address unique urban settlements with unique societies and communities with unique needs housed in every of these? And then still balance urban, rural development agendas.
I'm going to go back to what Governor McNabb started from, which is the communication aspect.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that the two major events in the country. That's. Or more like major activities in terms of information gathering and dissemination with regards to what's taking place in the country, especially from an economic standpoint. And that's the fact-finding mission from the National Council, National Assembly Standing Committees.
Yeah.
Yes, we have English as an official language, but I believe this piece of documents, like these reports, and you find them on the National Assembly or on the national on the parliamentary website, very important pieces of documents, and they're all in English. Now, we are assuming that everyone
have access to this information and everyone can understand this information. They are made public for everyone to access so they can understand what's going on in their country.
Yeah.
But just how many people are able to comprehend this information in the language that they're written in? This is where I admire religion now, because when you look at religion, you have a lot of versions that are written in a lot of different languages, and you see, you find the same thing in hymnals. Again, religion. You have English. You have English songs. You have some in Mbukus. You have some in Ushwambo. You have some in Lozi. And the digital ones that are coming, and I have like three of them on my phone. You can switch language at any time. But for things that are as important as economic and developmental information,
yeah,
we just want to assume that one language in terms of communication is going to do it.
You are proving a point, Helmut, that there's always evaded the actualization, the realization of improved, way of life in a country like Namibia.
Yeah.
It's easier for people to follow, for example, what religious entities want to do.
Yeah, because they break it down in multiple languages, extending their reach.
Well, it's also universally acceptable,
or
accepted that, you always listen to a religious representative,
yeah,
which now we can see why it's so difficult for politicians.
Why?
Well, it's the same problem that even the failed Austrian painter had. The religious leaders, for example, at that stage in Germany, were better public speakers. Just that dimension,
mm-hmm,
better public speaking, more comfortable at presenting in public, is something that makes any community member connect a lot better with a religious leader than they would with a political leader. For example, look at these addresses that we all went through.
Yeah.
The venues were small, firstly.
Yeah.
They were housed in one community or in one town's particular locality, which makes it exclusive.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the executives at the state broadcaster and at the regional authority would argue, yeah, but that's why it was televised at that specific time frame. But where did you and I watch those particular addresses, Helmut? We found them all on the internet, on YouTube, ne?
Yeah.
And internet coverage and internet coverage, basically, in Namibia and many parts for many demographics of the country,
yeah,
is still an exclusive, meaning a privileged technology. Yeah, it's still a luxury in many cases, in many scenarios. So we are continuously telling up how something as basic as a state of the region address can turn into something completely exclusive, can actually exclude people. And if people wanted actual answers, which are contained within a state of the region address in terms of the way forward, what is happening here, what is happening there, if you didn't have internet, you wouldn't know. And if you were at home, at many of them took place in the early parts of the morning, at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. in the morning, you would not be watching a state of the region address.
Nah.
If you were at the office, you wouldn't turn up your radio to listen to a state of the region address. That's why also in the one thing that I've loved of the South Africans and the Americans and even the British, Helmut, is that they actually have polls and try to assess how many listeners, how many viewers, how many readers. You know, they try to have these data sets at hand so that they understand who listens to what, when, where, who reads what, when, where, at what time, who watches what, when, where, at what time. There's this lovely, ridiculous TV show I'm watching on my very ridiculously illegal Russian movie site. It's not Russian, by the way. I just love throwing the Russian in there because it scares people off. Is that the TV show's name is Rivals, ne?
Yeah.
But it follows the 1980s British development of talk TV, specifically like, what we do here. But it was a template that comes from the US and from the UK. And the guy they use, it's a cluster of core characters. And the guy that's the actual interviewer is a former BBC TV journalist who did a specific late night TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being poached by a private TV network to do an earlier segment of the show he did at the BBC, but now on this segment. And he potentially has, you know, his messaging is not political. It's like what we do here. You know, we can talk to anyone and everyone and dissect any particular range of discussion and topic. The concern for that guy was in terms of how do you address or approach every subject matter. And the fun factor was, the determinant was, what you could see was people loved the range of topics that were being done. Now, until you watch the TV show, it stars the guy that was one of the dwarves in The Hobbit, the guy that was the prince, the leader of the party. You remember the guy with the black beard and the black hair? That guy, what is his name? Toch? Aiden something. It's not. Is it Aidan Quinn? Well, anyway, and and David Tennant from Doctor Who. If you know Doctor Who, if you've ever watched Doctor Who,
you can't watch The Big Bang Theory without knowing Doctor Who.
Well, I watched a lot more Doctor Who because it made more sense than watching. Actually, it didn't make sense, much of things. But there was a lot better acting in Doctor Who. But anyway, so, So we sit with the dimension, Helmut, of how the information also gets communicated.
Yeah, the information is important, but how is the dissemination in terms of not just the effectiveness, because you can only assess effectiveness once you have acquired enough reach.
Yeah.
But right now, the biggest question is the reach.
Yeah.
Yes, he's speaking corporate level English, but he's speaking in English. Yeah, is everyone getting the picture?
Yeah, which is a major we also have to assume and acknowledge that there are still going to be people, part of our population makeup, Helmut, that are who don't speak English and who don't understand English.
You can't blame them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that I think because. The main goal is to pass the information to as many Namibians as possible so they know what's going on with the youth employment or extractive industry or unemployment or any kind of activities, especially economic activities in the country. But when we are just sharing this information that is very important coming out of different regions, not only is it addressed in English, which I get it, it's our official language. And also one fun fact I just realized, much of the countries, when you look them up on their Wikipedia page, when it comes to language, it's labeled as official language. But for the UK, it's labeled as national language. I don't know, it's semantics. But
Helmut, that's why I started on that particular subject matter, to show that point of Tamantha. Man, how could I forget the lady?
Look, we have a lot of very important information we'd like to share. This, if you ask me, is one of the reasons why we had the nuclear bill fiasco in Rundu. Yeah. We have been having consultations for a very long time, and we have been publishing as a country these National Assembly, National Council standing committees or reports coming out of the Office of the Auditor General, and I would actually love to see a lot more reports coming out of the Office of Ombudsman. But it's just all in English, and I will just keep taking us to religion.
Mm.
Now, religion have been made very... they have widened the scope of reach in a lot of ways. One way is by translating, the text in a lot, not just scripture, but also the music in all kinds of kinds of languages. I mean, we have Imba app. If you look at the Imba app, it has a lot of religious songs in a lot of Namibian languages. Now we have, I think that's the template we must copy and implement it into economic discussions, public consultations, state of the region address, state of the nation address, at least in terms of publicizing the speech, because at the end of every state of the nation address, a speech is put out of the president. Just translate that in any language, so anyone can basically look at what the president was talking about.
Yeah.
I think that would have a lot of impact than just, okay, you know what, it's written, okay, our official language is English, therefore, let's just stick to English. That's just being over technical, if you ask me. But, time is up, by the way.
And on that note, guys, we'll see each other again, same time, same place, tomorrow.
Yep.
Helmut Jose?
Yeah, until tomorrow, same time, same place.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company, dear listeners. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place.